Hello. Hello and greetings, everyone. Good day to you. It's a good day. It's a good day to be alive. Even with all the dukkha, all the challenges, all the difficulties, and all the joys, all the ease, all of it, all of it. Common humanity. It's like this being human. It's like this being human. One moment, peace, ease. Another moment, what am I doing here on this retreat? 7 days of metta at home online. Hello, welcome, welcome. Welcome. Lovely to be with you in this space, in this co-created space. So I would like to share a few reflections, hoping that it might be of support, to your practice. And when I say those words to your practice in quotes, what is that? It's not just to your meditation, maybe of support to your meditation. Yeah, sure. But really, it's maybe of support to your practice, a practice of being human. And I think that's what I mean when I say practice. It's really, after a while, our practice becomes our life. And our life becomes our practice. It's not so much a distinction. Okay, now I'm sitting on my cushion, cross-legged, I'm practicing. Now I get up and now I'm not practicing. No, it continues. It infuses our lives and it infuses who we are, who we want to be, how we want to show up for ourselves and for others, for the whole world. So may it be. These words, may they be of service. It's my hope. May they be of service to your being human practice. So I'd like to first give an outline of what I'm going to talk about. Being in an ex-academic, we're told to say what we're going to say, say it, and then say what we just said. But I won't go into details. I'll just give you an outline of roughly what I'll talk about. So I want to start with a few words about common humanity, which is the theme for today's practice, or the invitation for today's practice, common humanity, just like me. And I would like to put the practice of metta, loving kindness, within the context of the Brahmaviharas, the four Brahmaviharas, and how they relate to each other. Because you have probably run into at least one, if not another, of the Brahmaviharas, at least maybe compassion, maybe you've had some vicarious joy, maybe some equanimity at times. So they're all intertwined. So I'd like to put this practice in context, the metta practice. And then also I've mentioned before this quaint terminology, which I love, which is the near and far enemies. Like, what are the masqueraders and the opposites of these four Brahmaviharas, heavenly abodes, these four practices that are interrelated, practices of the heart. I wanted to lean in a little bit into compassion when I talk about the four, because a lot of need for compassion arises because there is a lot of dukkha. It's just part of human being human, and has come up in the various conversations, practice meetings. And I love that Diana talked about compassion, self-compassion yesterday, beautifully. And we cannot have enough self-compassion, enough compassion. So I'd like to speak a little more about that today. And also, there have been some interest questions about the Brahma Vihara, especially metta as a unification practice, as a samatha practice, concentration practice. I want to say a little bit about that. Forgot to say, when I'm talking about compassion, I also want to say a few words about working with pain, whether it's physical pain, it's emotional pain, and that's something else that has come up on this retreat, and it comes up on many retreats. It just comes up. It's part of our practice. It's when you practice, this is what happens. Yeah, I think that's the outline for today. That's the outline for this talk. So with common humanity, with the theme that we have invited you to practice with this morning in the invitations, and the definition, this word sonder that I offered, and some of you have asked for reference, and I actually posted it, by the way. You might have gotten a notification or not. I posted it in the handouts area. So there's a handout that has the definition of sonder and reference. And please don't go now to the dictionary and read all the other words, which are fun, but please, please save that for later. Just hang out with sonder. It's a sweet word. Just wanted to post that because it can help sometimes to read it and just kind of linger with the word sometimes. From the dictionary of obscure sorrows. Obscure sorrows. It's a fun book, but please don't look at it now. Save it. Save it for later. You'll still be there. So this idea of just like me, this human being, this other person is just like me. They want to be happy. Just like me. This just like me is actually a magical phrase. Just like me. Just like me. And it actually works the other way around, if you haven't noticed already. Just like everyone else. I'm just having a hard time today. I'm having body pain, just like everyone else, just like anyone else, just like others, just like others. It's that aspect of common humanity, the mirror of it, because sometimes it's like, oh, it's just me. I'm a mess. I'm having a hard time. Oh, sweetheart, just like others, just like others. You can be sure that they're hundreds, thousands, millions of other people in the world right now who are having difficulty in this moment. Oh, may all of us be free from this challenge, this difficulty. So bringing common humanity, that other angle of it, both seeing, oh, this person just like me wants to be happy, to open your heart. And it can also help when it's like, oh, it's just everybody's got it. Everybody's just meditating great. They're in heavenly states. And it's just like me. Oh, just like them, just like others. I hold myself with care, just as others need care, need love, need. So just to bring that in your awareness for wherever, whenever it might be helpful. And today, you know, as I mentioned again this morning, and I like to emphasize it, these are invitations. These categories, we're going through the categories of metta systematically, just so that you hear them, just so that you have these systematic instructions. It doesn't mean, and as Diana has said, it doesn't mean that at whatever, 8:45 a.m. in the morning, you are ready for, okay, yay, this is time to open to common humanity. It may not be. It's okay. We're offering these invitations so that you know them, you hear them, you explore them. and see what is needed. And for many of us, for most people actually, staying with the self is the right thing to do. In fact, there are many of you on this retreat that I've suggested, recommended, please stay with yourself, stay with the dear self for the entire retreat, as long as possible. And it's not as if it's a remedial practice and you've been sent back to first grade because you can't graduate to the other categories. It's not like that at all. It's where, what is wise, what is needed. And rest assured, I have spent days, weeks, months, years with compassion, metta for myself, especially as I've had a lot of chronic pain, a lot of physical problems. And that's what's needed. Physical pain, emotional pain. It's pain. Turn to yourself. It's a cultivation. It's a cultivation. So for you, for others, and when you're also cultivating it for others, giving it to others, it's not like, oh, it's a gift. You have to be generous. You're being generous anyway. You're being generous to yourself. You're being generous to others. It doesn't matter. See what is needed. And sometimes it is needed to offer to others and just maybe brighten our spirit, brighten our heart by offering it to others. So see what's needed, what is wise. It's not an edict. There's not this is better than that. Yeah, doing metta for all beings. Yeah, that's higher grade. You get an A if you do that. Like, no, just whatever is needed, whatever is appropriate, whatever is wise. So common humanity, the category we've invited you to explore today, if you wish, is a lovely category. It's a wonderful category. If your heart is called to it, if it feels appropriate for you today, and it can be opening, as all the categories can be opening. So I'd like to share a little poem actually about this, which I love. The poem is called "My Ancestry DNA Results Came In." My Ancestry DNA Results Came In. The poem is by Fred Lamotte, Lamotte. And for those who are going to be asking me for the reference, I will post it. But so it's all good. So here we go. Just as I suspected, my great-great-grandfather was a monarch butterfly. Much of who I am is still wriggling under a stone. I am part larva, but part hummingbird too. I love the playfulness. There is dinosaur tar in my bone marrow. My golden hair sprang out of a meadow in Palestine. Genghis Khan is my fourth cousin. For those who you've seen, you know, fourth cousin on 23andMe and all that. But Genghis Khan was my fourth cousin, but I didn't get his dimples. My loins are loaded with banyan seeds from Sri Lanka, but I descended from Ravana, not Ram. My uncle is a mastodon. There are traces of white people in my saliva. 3.7 billion years ago, I swirled in golden dust, dreaming of a planet overgrown with lingams and yonis. More recently, say 60,000 BC, I walked on hairy paws across a land bridge, joining Sweden to Botswana. I am a bastard of the sun and moon. I can no longer hide my heritage of raindrops and cougar scat. I am made of your grandmother's tears. You conquered rival tribesmen of your own color. chain them together, march them naked to the coast, and sold them to colonials from Savannah. I was that brother you sold. I was the slave trader. I was the chain. Admit it. You have wings, vast and golden, like mine, like mine. You have sweat, black and salty, like mine, like mine. You have secrets, silently singing in your blood, like mine, like mine. Don't pretend that Earth is not one family. Don't pretend we never hung from the same branch. Don't pretend we don't ripen on each other's breath. Don't pretend we didn't come here to forgive. Don't pretend we didn't come here to forgive. Just like me, just like everyone else. Don't pretend that Earth is not one family. We're all related, dear siblings. We're all related. And through the practice of the Brahma Viharas, we get to feel, that connection. Whether it's we're practicing the category of the neutral being standing for all humanity, or whether it's for ourselves, because gosh, this being hurts. I'm hurting. It opens your heart to compassion. If you're practicing with yourself, if there is challenges, it can open your heart to compassion, not just for yourself, but tenderize it for others. You become more tender for other people's pain, sorrow, challenges. You don't become more selfish. Believe me, this is not how this practice works. So with that, I would like to transition to the second part of the talk that I've mentioned, which is talking about the four Brahma Viharas, the four heavenly abodes, and to put metta in context with the others. So we have some orientation, more orientation, and this idea of orientation isn't so much heady that, oh yeah, these are practices I need to know. It's number one out of that's not the point. The point is, when you run, as you have run into the other practices of the heavenly abodes, you recognize them. It's okay. You give yourself permission, your self-familiarity. It's like, oh, this is where I am. It's like providing a land of the territory, like, oh yeah, this is what she was talking about. I see how this has happened. Oh, I'm here now. I'm hanging out in mudita, my vicarious joy, or it's compassion or equanimity, or it's the near enemy of it. Oh, that's where I am. Okay, all right, get it. Yeah. And of course, the menu is not the meal. I'm going to talk about the menu, the meal you've been eating and you're going to continue to eat on this retreat, right? So the heavenly abodes, the Brahma Viharas, for those for whom the terminology is new, and even if it isn't, I'd like to repeat it. I love the word Brahma Viharas, translated into abodes of the Brahma. So Vihara is home, is abode. Brahma is translated as the gods or heavenly. So heavenly abodes, heavenly dwellings, the dwelling of the gods. Or in other words, this is as close we get to heaven on earth. And many of you might have experienced moments of this when metta has been flowing. Like, oh yeah, this is Sweet. I want to hang out here. Make it stay. Don't go away. Which is attachment. We'll talk about that. But it's that sweetness. It's that sweetness. Oh, this is sweet. And I'll share with you that really this definition came alive for me years ago when I was I think I've mentioned that I did a month of dedicating myself to this practice, and it was one of the happiest, best mo years of my life, months of my life. It was I understood, I got in a way I hadn't got before, that this is why this is called heavenly abodes. This is like heaven on earth. I was just so happy. I was a metta bhag. I was just walking around with metta for the flowers and for the birds and for all the other retreatants. And it was just a sense of peace. Not to say there were challenging moments, of course. This is a purification practice, as Diana and I have been talking about. Challenges can come up. It's okay. You're not doing it wrong. And for some people, when you do it for a long, long time, the challenges get purified, and there's only so many times you can go through the same stories, right? They get purified, and there's a sense of peace and ease that can arise. So perhaps maybe in a way I'm planting seeds of intention for when you may have a chance to dedicate yourself to another week, another 2 weeks, who knows, maybe another month at some point in your life to these practices. These are also known, these four practices, as the four immeasurables. The four immeasurables. And I love that, the four immeasurables, a sense of immeasurably, right? Just the sense of love, sense of joy or compassion, equanimity, immeasurable. So the four Brahma viharas, the four heavenly abodes, measurables. The four are, you've heard them, I'll say them again. The first one being metta, translated as loving kindness, which is the primary theme of our retreat. And just to say, metta is the, actually, let me mention the other three and I'll come back. Second one. In Pali, the word is karuna, Karuna, compassion, compassion. The third one, the Pali word is mudita, Mudita, vicarious joy, sympathetic joy, is joy, happiness for the happiness of others. And the last one, upekkha, Uppekkha, is the one way it's written in English. Upekkha, equanimity. Equanimity is the fourth one. So not to place, not to get a sense of, okay, how are they relating? So in the Theravada tradition, in this school of the elders, just that early, which is what we're kind of placed in, metta, loving kindness, is the primary Brahma viharas, is the one that we lead with. And then the other ones kind of come in, come through the door, as I will explain in a minute, as you've experienced yourself. However, just as a side note, you might have heard an emphasis on compassion from the Dalai Lama, if you've practiced in the Tibetan tradition, because they are closely related. And in the later traditions, compassion is the central one, is the one that is the teaching leans into. And then the other Brahma viharas kind of they come because they're all related. They're all, you can't have one without the other. There's no way, as I'll explain. So just know that. So even though this is a metta retreat, it's really a Brahma Vihara retreat in some ways. But of course, with the emphasis on metta, emphasis on metta. So how do they relate? So metta, as we have talked about, so consider metta as the kindness, as the sense of goodwill as friendliness of the heart that shines out. So this kindness, friendliness, when it meets someone or some being, and that being could be yourself, but I'll say an object, and it meets an object of metta, an object of your practice, who's in a neutral place, the neutral, not hurting, and this person, this being is not happy, is not unhappy, it's kind of in a neutral place. Metta keeps expressing itself as metta, as goodwill. May you be safe, may you be happy, healthy, have ease, etc. Okay? Or may I be safe, happy, healthy, and ease. Okay? All right, you're with me so far? Nod if you are. Yes, great. Okay. Now, the same quality, we're still talking about metta, this quality of neutral goodwill, just friendliness. You smile at a neighbor, okay? Just simple goodwill. When it touches, when it comes across a being who is suffering, who's in pain, then that metta gets expressed, becomes compassion. Okay, so metta plus suffering is compassion. As Diana said beautifully yesterday, compassion is the love child of metta and suffering. That's another way to see it. So basically, this neutral metta, when it comes across suffering, it holds the suffering. It holds the suffering being, holds the suffering, which could be you, by the way, I keep saying. Then it expresses itself as compassion, okay? So you see, you know, you're sitting, you're practicing, may I be safe, may I be well. It's like, oh, I miss so-and-so. And gosh, you've lost someone you dearly loved. You're hurting in that moment. You're hurting in that moment. In that moment, metta, that's meeting your suffering, has become the practice of compassion. So your self-metta, that until a moment ago, may I be safe, may I be happy, you're neutral. Now you're hurting, or your body is hurting. You're in pain. Oh, sweetheart, this is hard. May I be free from this suffering? May I hold this with ease? In that moment, metta has met suffering. It's becoming what? Compassion, self-compassion, okay? You're with me so far? Yes, okay, yay, thank you. Now, how the third Brahmavihara, mudita vicarious joy, the same metta, the same goodwill, again, smiling at the neighbor, just very simple goodwill, when it comes across an object, a being who is happy, who's not suffering, that was compassion, but who's happy, is joyous, just something wonderful is like, or, and by the way, it could be that they're not happy in every aspect of their life, but in some area of their life, they're happy, they're thriving. Maybe you're doing metta for your, I don't know, for your little nephew or niece. It's like, maybe, you know, little young ones, like, may you be safe. And then all of a sudden you just like, oh my God, you have this image of them giggling with joy. Like they're loved, they're taken care of. And maybe if you tune into that, if your metta holds the happiness, right? It can become, it can express itself as vicarious joy. May your joy continue. Or I'm happy for your happiness. I'm happy for your, you see, you feel happy, right? You feel uplifted in that moment. So with mudita, like may your happiness, may your joy continue. May it increase. May it never wane. Or simply, I'm happy for your happiness. Metta holding happiness. Okay. You're with me? That's mudita. It's still, we're still metta, right? But metta is now shape-shifting, right? Shape-shifting in all these interesting ways. All right. One last way that metta shape-shifts, which kind of brings curiosity up for people, and that is equanimity. What? Equanimity? That sounds kind of like peaceful, like metta feels like loving and warm and like, wait, explain this one. So this This is great. I love this. So equanimity, actually, equanimity, the way it relates to not just metta, but all the Brahma Viharas, is in two different ways. Okay. Way number one is that equanimity serves as the foundation, as the basis of all the Brahma Viharas. It's because if equanimity wasn't the platform, say, you know, the stable rock, the bedrock of metta, if there wasn't a sense of equanimity, stability, you would fall into the attachment or ill will, you know, all these different things would come up. Same with, you know, you would fall into the near or far enemies, which as I will explain what they are in a moment. So this equanimity, even though you don't quite know it's there, it has to be there to hold all the Brahma Viharas kind of in stability, to kind of allow them to be true, to be in their unique expression, and not to become the opposite or the near enemy. So that's way number one, how equanimity relates to all the Brahma Viharas, holding them as they are needed. Or similarly, say with compassion, I'll just say that here. If there wasn't equanimity with compassion, either with self-compassion or compassion for others, then compassion would become pity. Pity for others, or self-pity, like, oh, poor me, this is like, that needs that. Or it would become like, oh, you, well, it's like, may you be free from the suffering. Like, this would never happen to me. Like, so that's one way. I'll say more about this later. The second way equanimity is related is can also show up as sometimes when practicing compassion, either for yourself or for someone else, is just the suffering is very hard to hold, is too much, it's almost overwhelming. Then what's wise is to then lean into compassion. Like, things are as they are. Things are as they are. May I be with ease. May I hold this with ease. May I accept the comings and goings of things. May you accept the comings and goings of things. Things may not be as I wish them to be, and I accept that they are like this right now. So bringing the wisdom of impermanence, bringing the wisdom practices into the Brahma Viharas. And by the way, equanimity is where wisdom practices, vipassana, impermanence, not self, and dukkha, they come into the Brahma Viharas. So maybe I would say equanimity is the love child of metta plus wisdom. That's equanimity. Okay. One last thing to say about equanimity is that, yes, there is a sense of equipoise and ease. And yet, when you really, really practice it, there is care, there is warmth, which is why it's put together with the other Brahma Viharas. Equanimity is not cool, is not indifferent. That's the far enemy. That's the opposite. The indifference is like some people are in early in their practicing, I'm being equanimous, like, yeah, whatever. It's like, not that. No, 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 please. That's not equanimity. Equanimity cares. That's why it holds witness. Imagine you're at the deathbed of a loved one, someone you love, and they've had a full life. You hold presence. You're holding presence. You're not turning away. You're not denying, right? You're not saying, oh, this shouldn't happen. It's like this, it's wise, it's time, it is what it is. There's wisdom coming in, and you're holding presence with care. If you didn't care, you would turn away, right? But you care. There is an element of care in equanimity. You're holding presence. You're holding presence. These practices are so rich. There's so many nuances to all of them. So just some ideas to just to navigate as they come up, okay? And if you find you might in this retreat, there might be times it's just suffering feels like too much. So bring in equanimity. It's okay. And this is the time of the retreat when it is appropriate to share other phrases of the other Brahmaviharas. And I will do that also as the so that you have that as a resource. Okay. So don't panic now. Wait, what was that phrase for equanimity? Like I will post them. So few things I like to say about going back to compassion, which is a practice that comes a lot. Again, given that there's a lot of pain, suffering, dukkha is a part of being human. Metta, especially on a retreat, you might have noticed that pain and suffering has come up, and there has been a need for self-compassion. Speaking of working with pain, whether it's physical pain or emotional pain, I want to say a few words about that. Having worked with pain, physical pain for a long, long time, continue to work with it with my chronic illness, so as a gift. So first, notice if there is aversion, if there's aversion to the pain, if you're trying to get rid of it, and again, could be physical pain or substitute emotional pain, like, oh, this fear, this sorrow, this anger, just go away. I'm trying to practice metta. Like I'm a metta retreat. Oh, notice that if there's aversion or with pain, oh, I'm here practicing and I have back pain. Like, oh, notice if there is aversion instead of actually seeing it as an opportunity that the physical pain, emotional pain is an opportunity to turn towards. To open you up, to open your heart up to kindness, to compassion for yourself and for others. So, first see if there's aversion, like it feels like a distraction, and see if you can open to it, if you can befriend it, you can open to it. Well, you're here already. That's an aspect of acceptance. Well, you're here. You're the truth of this moment. This moment is like this. For whatever causes and conditions needs to be here like this. It's acceptance. It's also equanimity, bringing a little bit of that and like, yes, things are as they are right now, even though if I want them to be different. And then turning towards compassion, turning towards the pain. If it is physical pain, can you turn towards the pain with love, a part of your body? And notice if there are stories, feeling betrayed, hating your body, feeling you've been let down, like all of those. See those stories. Get to see them, recognize them, bow to them. They're not needed. It's just what's happening right now. You don't need second, third, fourth arrows. Or if the stories are why me, like everybody else is healthy, like, oh, sweetheart, just like me, just like everyone else. Dropping that and turning. And there are different things you can do at this point. One is with physical pain, turning towards the pain with care, with compassion to this part or all parts of the body, maybe even systematically, different parts of the body. With care, with ease. And the phrases could become, may I hold, may I be with this challenge with ease, may I be with it with grace, or even may I be free from this pain, from this sorrow. Again, not as a way of aversion, not as a way of pushing it away. Be careful with the phrases. It's a wish, it's a goodwill you're offering yourself. May I be free from this suffering? It's not like, may I be, like, go away, suffering. I hate you. That's not the spirit of it. Okay. And also pay attention. Here's Here's a subtle, here's something very subtle. Sometimes you might be doing this practice of being with the pain, being with the sorrow, and you think you're opening up to it. And after a while, when your mind settles and you realize, wait a minute, I'm actually being with it in order for it to go away. I'm using metta, I'm using compassion as a hammer, like whack-a-mole, just trying to like make it go away. Oh, be aware of that. It's not a sin. It's okay. We all do that. I've done that. I've noticed that in myself. Long time, we're like, wait a minute, I'm still trying to do this to make the pain go away. Like, when you see that, that's another insight, that's another layer of letting go. Don't judge yourself, it's okay, it's completely normal, completely normal. And yet, when you see it, bow to it, hug it, thank you. I really want to open up to this. It's okay. And when you get to that point, when you can open up to the pain, the suffering, sorrow, perhaps this question of, I can be with this. Even if it doesn't go away, I can be okay. I can be okay. I can hold it with care. I can hold it with love. Even if it doesn't go away, I can have well-being, even if I'm not well. That's a level of freedom. That's a deep, deep level of freedom. When we talk about freedom, said this before, nirvana, it's not just like ta-da, like a Christmas tree, you light up enlightened. These moments of freedom, I mean, they're big experiences too. Those can happen also. It's another big talk, long talk, but these are also freedom, moments of freedom. Moments of freedom when, yeah, the body is in pain. I'm not well. And yet I have well-being. It's okay. It's all right. It can be here. It can be here and I can be okay. Like, yeah, there can be joy. There can be gladness. There can be delight. And yeah, there can be pain. That's freedom. That is freedom. And it can be both physical and emotional. And emotional. I mean, this practice is amazing. Let yourself be surprised. And as you open up to emotional and physical pain, it's okay to titrate. It's okay at times if it feels too much, like, okay, it's too much. Take a break, maybe go to something that's more easy in the body, maybe give metta to someone else, just take a break, maybe give metta to the birds, just enjoy the beauty of the flowers, titrate, and then when you're ready, okay, maybe open up to it again, or maybe feel it somewhere in your body where it's comfortable and not in pain. So there's so many different ways to resource yourself. So many different ways to resource yourself. One other thing I wanted to mention, I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, but I wanted to bring it again. Another beautiful practice, which was my go-to for many years when I had so much pain was and bedbound, was the sense of, oh, there are many other people around the world, just like me right now. There was a man, you know, there's a young boy in, I don't know, in a Scandinavian country. I would imagine a little boy was really sick and hurting, or a woman in a hut in Africa, or, you know, an old person. So I would imagine in my imagination, all these people, all of us, because can be sure in any moment in time, there are hundreds, thousands of people who just like you are suffering in a particular way. They're with pain, sorrow, fear, loss, disconnection, loneliness. So you bring them in. May all of us have ease. May all of us be free. Ah, even as I say that, there's this feeling of, wow, all these beings around the world. May all of us May all of us, there's this sense of common humanity, connection with all beings. So please, please bring this in. It's, it may be supported to you. I do want to mention the near and far enemies, as I've promised to do. So the near enemy of metta, as mentioned before, the what masquerades as metta but is not metta, is attachment. Again, if you fall into it, it's not a sin. It's just like, oh, you notice, oh, yeah, I'm being attached, expecting to be loved in return, wanting good things to happen, magical thinking to the object of metta, or strengths attached. I love you if you love me back. The opposite, the far enemy, is hatred, anger, ill will. And it's okay. Again, it can come up. This is a purification practice. You'll recognize the far enemy pretty quickly because it's the opposite. Again, it's not a problem. It's not a problem. As I've said, you'll do this metta, for example, for a dear friend, for a benefactor, and then you remember that one time they let you down, which you haven't thought about in 30 years. It's okay. Just stay with it. Maybe turn the compassion to yourself, because in that moment you're angry, you're hurting yourself. And then just stay, or stay with the relationship, continue. So I'm going to continue mentioning the near and far enemies. With compassion, the near enemy is pity and empathetic distress. So pity is when it's for others, it feels like, oh, they're less than. Like, oh, yeah, may you be free from the suffering. You know, when you say you're doing metta for your benefactor, dear friend, and oh, gosh, they're really hurting. So you're holding their sorrow with compassion. But then it's like, well, that would never happen to me. May you be free from suffering. It's like there's a distance. Like, whoa, that's pity. That's not compassion anymore. Compassion, when you feel that, wow, this is me. This could be me. This is me. It could be me in the future. It is me. I could be in that situation. We are not so different. And similarly, self-pity, there's a sense of like not being resourced, or poor me, poor me, poor me, like losing touch of the goodness, of the care, falling into the other near enemy, the sympathetic distress, like the overwhelm. And that's when feeling of the feeling into the pain overwhelms the holding it with metta, with care. When when you feel too much into the pain, can fall into sympathetic distress. So it has to be held with care. It has to be balanced, actually. It has to be balanced. Feeling into the pain, balanced with care, love. Otherwise, you can lose your footing. I'll say it again. Otherwise, you can lose your footing and fall into empathetic or sympathetic distress. If you lean too much into the pain without balancing it with care, with love. Okay? And some people actually confuse compassion with empathy. Empathy is just feeling into the pain. But compassion has this aspect, element of care and love that holds it, really balances it. Far enemy of compassion, the opposite is cruelty, which again is pretty easy to recognize if you find yourself with cruel wishes. The sympathetic joy, mudita, the near enemy, is comparison, or it's over exuberance, and also the sense of pride. Like, it's not just, oh, I'm happy for your happiness. It's like, I'm happy for your happiness. Like, you're owning, it's like making it yours. Like, you're, it's like, my child just won, I don't know, the something, like, oh, there's a sense of pride. There's or over exuberance. If you get way, way off, you know, if the equanimity isn't there to balance it, and you feel like you've had a bottle of champagne. And I've experienced that before on a retreat. I did so much mudita. I was punch drunk. I was like, whoa, this is too much. This is not balanced anymore. I've fallen into the enemy of it. It masquerades as mudita. It's really happy and joyous. I was really happy, but not balanced. So again, not a sin, just so you know. And the far enemy, the opposite, is envy. When you're wishing, when you're happy for somebody else's happiness, and all of a sudden it's like, I want that. Why are they having it? I want that. So lastly, equanimity, I've already mentioned. Near enemy, actually, I think I mentioned it was far enemy, but it's the near enemy is indifference. It's the near enemy that's indifference and aloofness. And aloofness, it masquerades as equanimity, but it's not equanimity. It's like, oh, I don't care. I'm so cool. Like, yeah, it's all okay. It's fine. But that's not equanimity. It doesn't have care in it. The far enemy of equanimity, the opposite, is anxiety, overwhelm. When you're really falling into something, or so when you're falling, so explain this in a different way. So equanimity is equipoise, and then there is the feeling tones of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And equanimity is more in the neutral, not falling into the like, I want it, overwhelm, greed, I want this. Or resentment, like, oh, make it go away. I don't want it. It's neither pulling, neither pushing, nor overwhelmed. So it's a sense of equipoise. So I do want to say a few words with the limited time that is left. So I've promised I always have more material than there's time. Oh, well, it's okay. There's more. Future retreats, more time to practice. I do want to say a few words about what has come up. Some people have asked about concentration, about samatha practice, unification that can arise. So the Brahma Viharas, all four Brahma Viharas, are objects of what's called samatha practice, states of samadhi, often translated as concentration, though I don't like that word. I prefer unification, composure, which also Diana used. It's coming together, it's coming together, the mind settling, the mind settling. As we repeat these phrases, as we repeat the practice, as we keep staying. With the practice, the mind settles. The mind settles. And these four Brahma Viharas are objects, I mean, the same way that mindfulness of the breath, many people use as the object of settling the mind in breath, out breath, anapanasati, mindfulness of the breath, so that the mind settles, becomes calm, perhaps even enters states of absorption. Similarly, when we keep staying with the phrases, keep staying with the feeling, keep staying with the, what I like to call the three ring circus, as both Diana and I have talked about, both, one ring of the circus, as we've been mentioning, is the feeling, is the embodiment, the bodily feeling of metta. It's just feeling metta, warmth. The other one being the, actually, let me start with the first one, because really the first one is the image, is the felt sense of the person. That's the first one. When you bring that up, everything else follows. When you bring up the connection with the person, with, say, with the dear being, that's the first ring of the circus. Out of that flows your feeling, your kindness, your the embodiment for the of metta for them. And on top of that, then you layer the phrases, and the phrases are kind of like the wrapping, like it just kind of wraps everything. It just puts it both so that there's continuity. There's continuity. At some point, when the mind settles, with unification, becomes more unified. And many of you have reported it feels easy. It's like, wow, I want to keep doing this. It's sweet. You might notice that the phrases, the long forms, like, oh, too much, becomes the short form. The wrapping is like, I don't need so many ribbons anymore. It's already held together. And then it's like, oh, I don't need the full phrase. The words are enough. The words are enough. Like, oh, I don't need all these extra ribbons. Okay, just a little bit. Just the words are enough. At some point, I don't need any ribbons at all. It's just like, it's held in place. The words drop. The words, the phrases all drop. And all that remains is the feeling and the image. Don't let go of the image or the felt sense. Because that is from what for many people helps keep the radiating of metta, the feeling of metta. Sometimes when it gets really, 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 it's really going, sometimes the image could drop, but anyway, a lot more detail than I want to get into. I would say for the purpose of what we're actually for the purpose of even jhanas, the deep states of absorption, the teaching, especially the teaching from my teacher, Pak Sayadaw, the jhana master, is you keep the image of the person. Otherwise, they'll all become indistinguishable, all these different categories. And it's helpful for them to be some in this way of practicing from the Visuddhimagga, from Abhidhamma, from the path of purification. And if these words don't make sense to you, don't worry. For some of you, this would make sense. You keep these categories distinct until the borders, until the boundaries between the categories automatically drop. And there is no difference in your heart. Loving yourself versus loving your enemy versus loving a good friend versus loving a neutral person is just, you know, if a thief came up and wanted to behead someone, you couldn't choose. You couldn't say, oh yeah, it's a person I have difficulty with. You cannot do that at some point after you've been practicing for a long time. And that's really a beauty of this practice. These practices really show us the amazing mystery, magnificence of our minds, our hearts. We think we drive a buggy and then we explore these practices. And as I said, again, this silly metaphor I'm using, some Lamborghini. Wow, this is amazing. I didn't know it had all these amazing capacities, this heart and mind. But be patient. Be patient. Be patient. There's so much that we can cultivate and explore through patience, through self-acceptance. Drop by drop, seed by seed by seed. Let's just sit together for a minute. Letting all the words drop, fall away. And there be a feeling of, the goodness of the Dhamma that we have shared together. Sitting in this container of the Dharma. Of the Dharma together. May all beings, ourselves included, wake up. Wake up, have freedom, have ease. May we wake up to the the magnificence of our inner goodness and let it shine far and wide. Thank you all. Thank you for your kind attention. And please take whatever is useful, leave whatever is not useful or confusing. Let go. Have a good rest of the evening or whatever time zone you're in. Bye.